back. Time for another episode of Confident ROI. The one show, maybe the only show you can listen to that gives you high confidence you're going to get a real return on your investment. Whether you work in a business, on a business, or with other businesses, from the man who's done all three, Alex Verrocchio. Hey, Alex.
Hello, Paul.
Oh, it's going to be one of those days today. All right.
We got some echo.
Everybody just sit back. We're going to play some smooth tips here from the Smoothmeister himself.
I'm working on that.
Hey, you know, I got a question for you because we're coming to the end of the year here, 2018, for those listening in the future sometime here. And like every end of the year, I start thinking ahead, what should I be doing next year? And, you know, unemployment's record low, business is up a little bit. Trying to wonder, who should I hire? Who should I think about hiring next year? Any thoughts on that?
Well, you can always hire yourself, right?
That's what I was getting at. I
kind of figured.
You're actually going to hire yourself. How many consultants actually put their money where their mouth is? How many consultants actually try and put into practice all the years of training and experience and advice that they've given others? Not many.
I don't know, but
you should go other way. You work for somebody, and then as you get older and get less, maybe you get aged out, maybe you get pushed out, maybe you just get tired and decide to go do something on your own and quit playing politics, whatever it is that drives you out of the corporate culture. Usually the consulting gig is the last thing that you do. But you're going the reverse. You're going to try and go from being a consultant to a business, from a one-man business owner to a true employer of many people here. Talk about that a little bit. What prompted that? That's a big different change I don't hear very often.
It prompted, I've done things in the reverse order in my career earlier. I was involved with I was an analyst and did acquisitions for a company that was consolidating an industry, and we acquired a bunch of stuff, and then I started running some of the regions of it, and it should have been the reverse order.
Yeah, right.
It's like, you know, what should we be acquiring, how to evaluate it, but I would acquire things that I didn't even know how to operate or what was
didn't even know what it was. Yeah, right. Something new.
Yeah. Yeah. The company grew really fast. Unfortunately, went in bankruptcy.
But okay. Not a good model to buy things they didn't know what they were doing in.
Yeah. But I learned this thing of I do due diligence on these projects and buying these companies. And some of the ones that looked the greatest on paper were horrible in reality. And
right.
Some of the ones that looked the skinniest on paper were the best in reality.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Why? What was missing off the numbers? What was missing off the profit and loss sheet?
It's easy to stop when you like the answer, when the numbers look good.
Boy, I like that one again. Say that one again. It's easy to stop when you like the answers. I heard enough.
Well, and it also comes down to like reviewing P&Ls with people and financial statements. When the numbers look good, people aren't asking a lot of questions.
Yeah.
When
right.
the numbers look horrible, it's like, this can't be right. You know, we're going to tear these apart until we find an answer we like, right?
Right.
And I think when you're doing a deal, the neurotransmitters, the good juice, the dopamine's flowing, we're going to make a killing, this is great, it's easy to stop. And so that's one of the things I've seen that's out there, that trying to find the truth, regardless of the good juice or the bad juice going in your brain in terms of, oh, this is going to be great or this is going to be horrible, we're going to lose our shirts.
Right.
And it's easy to kind of slip between those two and not really find out the truth, because usually the truth's somewhere in between where it can be a good deal. But what are the risk factors you got to manage? Very rarely are deals just, straight to the top. Usually you got to overcome some obstacles. What are they, and what's our plan for them?
And again, all numbers other than counting how your current sales, are based on some sort of assumption, a projection into the future. Maybe it's based on a track record. Maybe it's based on a hunch. But there's some assumption baked into those numbers that can change them dramatically one way or the other. And I'm reminded, we do a show here on the network called Corporate Undertaker. And it's a guy who, for 20 years, was just that. He was the guy that was brought in by the banks to either bury him or bring him back to life. When the loan went bad, and these are $100 million companies, somebody has to come in at the last minute and decide, do we shut it? Do we sell it? Do we try and save it? And that's what he did. And so his whole thing is lessons from the dead and dying. You know, what can you learn? And one of the lessons he talked about just the other day is, you know, the seeds of their destruction were planted during good times, when they stopped asking questions, when they started spending money freely, when they started making dumb choices or overlooking waste and fraud or other sorts. What's the matter? Business is going good. I'm not going to worry about that right now. When times are tough, you worry about every penny. When times are good, you start to let those things slide, and that starts the seeds of your own destruction. So we don't see it until tough times come, till something changes in the market that makes you wake up and look at, am I just looking at the number I wanted? And he said so many times he walks in and they'll say, show me the numbers. And on paper, it all looks good. Then why can't we make payroll next Monday? You know, there's something in there that they didn't go far enough to look. For example, he gave one, and I'll just let you, I'm sure you've seen some too. He went into one company and they had borrowed all this money based on inventory. I know they made something old school like shoes or something. And when they really, and he said, what's this? Oh, this is all our inventory that's, you know, still sellable that we're borrowing against. And when he went down and looked at the stuff, nobody had looked at it in years. It was old, beat up, out of date. This wasn't sellable stuff. They were kidding themselves.
It happens a lot, and we've talked about it on the show just in terms of having a good relationship with feedback.
Yeah.
Just because you like the numbers or the numbers
match whatever is in your mind.
Yeah. And again, that's how our brain works.
Self-fulfilling, right? Whatever they call it, something what do they call it? Something bias.
Self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, so there's another one for it, something bias or something, where you're normalcy bias, where you think... If it sounds like what you already assumed,
confirmation bias.
That's what I'm trying to write.
It confirms, and that's, you know, we're looking for stuff that confirms our view of the world.
Yes, exactly.
And it's really easy for it to be positive. It's really easy for it to get to the negative, in terms of that. But people who don't, we talked about dealing with feedback. If you're not getting the results you want, you talked about at the beginning, you know, it's planning for next year right now.
Right.
And okay, what happened this year with the plan? And
what plan? We put that away quietly a long time ago here.
Right.
Old new plan.
I mean, that's the most typical thing. This year is going to be different, and by January 17th, is it March? Is it March that's kind of gone? In the reality of are we on track with this plan? If not, what can we do about it? And one of my big fears in acquiring my first business is getting stuck in it.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, you know, the size of business that I can afford, it's not going to be something where I can just come in and sit on a throne. I have to roll up my sleeves
and
build this business, but also not get stuck in it.
Right.
And you see a lot of guys that are stuck in their business.
So let's talk about a couple of these things, because you've been a consultant now for how many years? You've been consulting with businesses for a long time.
I have. During that point, I ran one business for a client. So over the last 15 years, I've been a consultant. Four of those years, I ran a business.
And what did you specialize in? When they came to Alex, what were they looking for? Why did they hire you? What was your mojo? What was your go-to service that you provided?
The go-to is they couldn't figure out their numbers. They didn't like what the number said, or they couldn't get numbers. And so, the number's got to be wrong.
This can't be right.
Right. And only one time was it not as bad as the numbers were showing. It's like, hey, they actually have a lot more money than they knew.
Yeah, right.
And it's a pretty profitable business. It was just horribly administrated, but
so they come to you for some truth, Now, you're going to be the man who's going to be in the hot seat. Will you be open to more truth? Sure. Or does there something about taking on that role that changes your view of the world? And I'll give you a very classic example. When I was in college many years ago, I know it's a famous study, I don't remember the name of it exactly, but they studied a group of students at Stanford University. And the idea was this. They put half of them in a room and they said, okay, you guys are the guards and you guys are the prisoners.
The prison one, yeah.
Right. And let's just see what happens. Just play it out. And you're all trapped in here all night. And then at first they're goofing around and then they started doing a little more serious. And pretty soon it got real serious. And the guards are starting to act pretty rough, like, hey, go shut up and sit down. I'm the guard here. What makes you the guard here? Nobody special. Hey, I said, sit down. And they had to stop the experiment because it got so ugly. And the takeaway was there's something about roles that makes us assume different personalities. So if you're the business owner, do you assume a different personality than the business consultant? It's easy to go in and tell them what's wrong with something. You're detached, that you have no connection with it, you weren't involved with it, but if it's your baby and you were responsible for it, does that suddenly make it harder to see the truth?
It's harder to hold yourself accountable. It's yeah. easy to rationalize things and that. And we've all done it on things. And so when you have pressure on you, it's even more. And now I wake up in the middle of the night thinking about the deal.
Yeah,
I have dreams about it all the time. And so a lot of times that time outside the business can be stressful, and then when you get to it, kind of it's hard to do what needs to be done. And so what I've seen being inside it, leading a company, helping them trying to figure it out, is that check and balance in terms of, okay, what are we going to do? Are we going to do it? And if it's not getting done, that's a sign that, hey, maybe it doesn't want to be done. And unless that can be changed, well, stop doing it. You know, how do you get out of it?
How do you get out of it? Well, I'm just reminded as I'm listening to this, my late great father was a heck of a regional manager for Chrysler Corporation. We moved all around the country. He was always outperforming everybody else. He always got the bad.
You can buy a better car. If you can find a better car, you buy
it. You buy it. Exactly. Right. Yeah. Exactly. Lee Iacocca. And it was in those days. And so there was only one time I asked him, I said, he enjoyed working for a corporation. He was good at it. He revived many regions, and we moved all around the country. He was the go-fix-it guy. We lived in all these crazy places, Pittsburgh and everywhere else. So one time he told me a story much later in life. He said, there was only one time I was tempted. He said, I found, because part of his job was to set up dealerships. And so he'd find the deal sometimes. There was nobody to plug into it, and they'd go see a sweet spot. They knew this was a perfect location. They had a good deal on the building. And then they'd find somebody to plug into it. And he said this one deal he kept holding on to and holding on to, and everybody kept saying, what's with that one? It was in Appleton, Wisconsin. I'll never forget that. I've never even been to Appleton, Wisconsin. And he just fell in love with this thing, and he said he held on to it for 6 months. And finally they said, are you going to give this to somebody or not? Because he thought, maybe this is mine. Maybe I'll quit and do this. And I said, why didn't you? And he said, fear. He said, I knew I could tell others how to do it. I didn't know if I could do it myself. He said, I can't explain that, but he wasn't confident that he could do it himself.
The fear, dealing with the fear, that's the elephant in the room in terms of, can you go do it yourself? And people get into business, and then that fear is still there. And I've been looking at different businesses and talking to people. And
you're talking about mostly kind of service kind of businesses.
Services, but any business you got to sell. Any business. Yeah. And today you have to sell not just to customers. You got to sell to potential employees and current employees.
Isn't that the truth? Yeah, right.
As I look
Why should I work
and
for
talk,
you? Yeah, right.
Yeah, and talk to different business owners and look at different businesses. Almost every one of them's got a capacity constraint from, can they get enough quality team members at a price that they can make money at.
Yeah, right. That seems to be a common complaint these days. I can't get enough good help, and that's holding me back.
It's something where very rarely, of all the companies I've dealt with, very rarely do they really have a cohesive strategy on how to answer that question.
I'm laughing. I'm not sure I do or anybody else at a certain level. I don't know what it is. I don't know how to answer that question. You think you've got processes in place to find good people and to train them and to hold on to them until you have to do all three. And then it ain't as easy as it sounds.
Well, I think it's the unintended consequence of breaking that 30-year relationship, right?
Yeah.
That when
right.
we started our careers, people could still work. There was a chance they would work for one company.
My dad did for 40 years for Chrysler Corporation. Started off in the assembly line, worked his way up into the corporate ranks. Doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah, and when I was going to college, my mom went through a layoff at AIG. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of in the early 90s, and things were just changing. AIG was a growing company that looked like it was going to keep growing forever.
Forever, yeah.
And were really smart. But they started to, you know, rethink how they did business. And I think the costs and people don't stay with companies all the time. But now you need a reason. There's not the golden handcuffs. There's not sort of just the culture to stay with a company.
Right.
I remember my grandmother, the first time I left my starting job with Ernst & Young, she's like, how could you do that? Why would you do that?
I know, you're going to be a job hopper. That's going to follow you forever. Nobody will hire you. You're not reliable, dependable. Stick to it. And nowadays, it's almost the opposite. If you come in and say, I've been with the company for 10 years, 20 years, if you even see that anymore, they look at you like there's something wrong with you. Weren't you ambitious? Didn't you want something more? They see that as a negative. They love poaching people from other companies. They don't question you when you walk in the door and say, I currently work for your competitor. Oh, yippee, I can steal one.
It's a dynamic environment. And
that's a polite way to say it. Yeah,
yeah, it's in flux. People, it's what's in it for them. And it's not just financial. I mean, I'm looking at it. How do I make sure I don't have an emotional tax on my team? And some of the services we're looking at doing, some of them are kind of dirty.
Yeah.
And so how do you, not dirty. And
but
illegal,
people get their hands dirty. Yeah, right.
People literally get their hands dirty. Yeah.
Right.
And it might smell a little bit. And so why are they going to do that? And that.
So what's your answer? Because you're saying I can buy a business that I think I can afford, I think I can run, I think I can grow, given everything that you've done. I think I can do better than this guy who started this business, and I think I can take it beyond whatever state, maybe their mom-and-pop-sized business or a handful of employees or 100 employees. I don't know what size you're looking at, but probably small to mid-sized business here. And you think you can do a better job based on the years of expertise and consulting work you've done where you've run companies and certainly advised a lot of companies. So what's your answer, though, to these intangibles, these why me, why would you work for me, why would you stay here, and that whole company culture that's so critical these days to being successful?
Well, I'm using what I've learned. And the most interesting we've talked about a lot is on the neuroscience. We like to be in packs. Mm-hmm. It is a natural wiring of us, and it's something that doesn't exist a lot. A lot of companies now, it's like, well, you have a job and you're on the team until you're off the team. But how do you form a bond and a connection that, hey, we're in this together. We're going to hunt together. You're going to be appreciated for doing good work. We want you to finding out what's important to them. What people aren't all alike, and some people might have, hey, how do I get out of debt? Can we help them with a plan to get out of debt? If they want to learn a trade, can we help them get to that level and find out what's important to them and help them with that plan? Not just, hey, here's what we want you to do between these hours. Here's what we want you to do, but how do we get you to your 3-year plan? Not just the company.
Right. Exactly.
And we're in this together in terms of, what do you have to do to help the company and having good days every day for the company? And what does success look like to you when these things occur as well?
All right. I think we should just take a quick little break and run some commercials here, and then let's come back and talk about some of the tools that you're going to put in place. You've got a whole list of them that you've been the toolmeister. You've got a whole garage full of tools out there, and ready at your disposal here. Which ones are you going to pick, and how are you going to choose? I'd love to hear that, because that's what you've been known for as well, the telling people what tools to use. Now you got to tell yourself. We'll be right back after some words from some sponsors. And we still want to remind you that Confident ROI is still out there, the magazine. You can go pick up your issue and find out all sorts of tips and ideas. That hasn't gone away. It's still up and out there. And we've talked about all the different topics in the past. I'm going to bring up some of the older ones like EOS, because I'm sure we're going to discuss that in a moment. Other operating systems out there. It is a difficult task to find the right tools and then to figure out how to use them. You can't just go buy a hammer and a saw and immediately know how to build something. So if you're looking for any advice on that, go to confidentroi.com and be confident that there's some answers there for you. I purposely picked EOS because I know I'm looking at some of the notes and things that we were going to talk about here today. That's one that you've been a believer in, you've written about, I'm assuming you've implemented it or recommended it to others. That's an entire entrepreneur operating system. Is that something that you would use in a small service business like you're looking to acquire?
Absolutely. And it's right at the top of the list. As I'm trying to recruit people to join me, I'm looking at, they have a lot of tools, but one of their first ones is the Vision Traction Organizer. And in a couple pages, it lays out what's important to the company, what's it trying to do over the long term, over the medium term, over the short term, and gets people on the same page, gets the dialogue going. Because nothing like trying to articulate something to even for the leader, like, go, I still don't know exactly what our marketing strategy is for that. But getting that dialogue going, that it's so easy for someone, you bring someone in, them have another, I think I know what we're doing, and just to go off and do it. But to really understand, hey, what's our niche and what are we going to do? It's like we've talked about, these systems really are a series of questions. Mm-hmm. And answering those questions help direct your actions. But they also talk about what we were just talking about earlier. Okay, is it working? Are these answers good answers? Do we need to revisit them? Is our niche really this, or is it something else? How should we be focusing our efforts? What's the most important thing? These type of frameworks really start to drive things. And frankly, for the team to say, hey, you know, Alex, we're not living up to one of our core values. Is that, and I've written it in a book, that the leaders, the biggest issue with all these tools is if they don't have a good relationship with feedback, then don't even use them. So I'm going to, you know, I give them my book and just tell them, read chapter two. If I'm not keeping up with this, then you tell me. Does this not waste our damn time?
So is this just a variation of A Few Good Men and the famous line by Jack Nicholson? You want the truth? You can't handle the truth. Too many people, I don't think, can handle it. They ask for the truth, and then when they hear the truth, they don't like it. It doesn't fit what their predisposed belief is. It offends them, it bothers them, it's uncomfortable, it's negative, it's something.
It fires in their part of their brain that it emotional pain, and they want it to stop. But there's a reason why that quote lives on. There's
truth in that truth. Yeah. Oh, I've seen it so many times. As a consultant, I've had many cases years ago when I did PR and marketing consulting before I did all this radio stuff. I would go into a business, I can think of a couple immediately, and everything I said to them, they said, well, that's not true. That's not right. And finally, I'm like, well, then why am I here? If you don't want to hear what I have to say, I'm just telling you what I'm seeing here. You hired me to be an outside set of eyes and ears, and I'm reporting back what I'm seeing, and maybe I'm missing something here. Tell me what it is. But everything I bring up, you seem to immediately shoot down.
Well, that in a nutshell is why I'm done being
I think that's why I quit, too. It's like, it's very frustrating. It's like, well, why am I here if you're not going to do anything?
Well, if you look at the implication of it, right, if you are right, what does that mean for them? Hey, right. Is that going to be a lot more work? Is that going to be painful? Is that going to put my job at risk? And
all of the our, brain, I've seen,
our brains are wired that we'd rather come to these conclusions on ourselves, on our own. And if you look at Jim Collins' work and Good to Great and Built to Last, it's the companies themselves came to the insights on their own.
Mm-hmm.
They rarely hired. It wasn't like, well, we hired McKinsey and he solved the they solved the problem for
right.
us. They had to come up. They had to find it themselves. And Philip Morris, there was an example of they bought 7-Up and it was horrible. And instead of firing somebody or blaming it on somebody, they did a postmortem and they tried to learn, okay, what did we do wrong? And so how do we not do that again?
Right. Right.
And that, but that was also the we're going to look for something, understand it and learn from it. And that's a rarity. Our brains are wired, like you just said, hey, that can't be right.
Yeah,
that can't be right.
And that's why, interesting enough, I go back to this other show, he kiddingly calls himself the Corporate Undertaker, not just because they were asked to bury these people, but because it was that kind of hush it up. Something's gone bad. The whole business went bad. The loan went bad. And we just want to bury this and get on with it. We don't really want to do a postmortem. We don't want to dig it up and look at it again. It stinks. It's rotten. Just bury it and hide it and get it over with. And therefore, nobody learns from that. There is no lesson because they don't even look at it. They just move on. They cut their loss and move on. And I think that that's easy to do when you have infinite amount of money, when you're Google and you can play with stuff endlessly and you just understand that a certain percent of these aren't going to work and you just keep throwing them out till one succeeds. But at your stage, you got one shot at this, right? You don't have 10 shots.
You just got one shot. You're quoting Marshall Mathers, the great American American poet.
Right. Yeah, right.
You exactly. only got one shot.
Right. Exactly. And so you got to use it well. You got to use it wisely. So
well,
tools
yeah,
are one
creating,
way to do it.
That creates another pressure. It's one thing when you can take a like GE. Well, we can just buy a company to grow. Well,
yeah.
they did that a few too many times.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Exactly. And acquisitions aren't always easy to integrate. You know, Chrysler and Daimler-Benz, horrible example, a marriage that should have never happened. Time Warner and AOL, another one, a classic one that just blew up in their face, seemed on the surface to be a perfect match. Somebody makes content, somebody distributes content. Why wouldn't the two come together? Two totally different cultures, types of businesses, everything about them. Chrysler and Mercedes, as I said, you know, one makes a high-end, one makes a low-end. Seems like a good match, except they're two totally different kinds of dealers and customers and products and ways of thinking here in two different countries, two different cultures. It just didn't fit together.
And that gets down to when you talk about core values and focus, you can have different companies under one umbrella, but what changes? What is the common denominator? What thing changes? Are we going to have this level of quality in the new one, or what is the overlap? And when there's people fighting that out because it's not clearly defined, that becomes an issue.
How do you get here's the one that I always fear. Here's the one I would fear if I was in your shoes. You're putting your faith. You can't do it all, right? It's even though it's a small business, temptation is to go in whatever you're going to do. I don't know. I'll pick something out of the air. You're going to clean buildings or something or whatever. I don't know. Or something going to do this. Or you're going to have a little oil change company or something or whatever. Because you're talking about hands-on kinds of gritty things. Whatever it is, you're going to find one of these things. And my fear is these are hourly employees. They're not in it for the long run. They're passing through. This is some stage in their life. How do you get them to care about you? This is your business, your baby. You can give them all the pep talks and corporate culture and opportunities for feedback, but they just don't care. I don't care. It's just an hourly job. I had five before it, and I'll have five after it. You know, as long as it works, I'm here. As long as the minute it doesn't, I'm out of here. How do you get them to care about your company?
My plan has a couple points to it. One is to connect with them. Find out what's important to them and what are they trying to do where are they trying to go in life? But connect.
Is this lots of late night pizza parties and bowling together?
You have to do something. You know what's going to be what is going to work? Is it getting together for lunches or something that you connect with them? But also opening up the books. And I'm gonna pull from The Great Game of Business, mm-hmm. where they had to. The International Harvester was going to close the overhaul facility in Springfield, Missouri in the early 80s. Mm-hmm. And the local management said, well, can we buy it out? And they said, oh, it's $10 million.
Yeah, right.
And they only had $100,000 they could scrape together.
A little short.
So they couldn't have a bad month because all their equity went into paying. And the bank gave them the loan, I think, because, well, if the plant closes,
the bank closed.
Yeah, right. So what do we got to lose, right?
Right.
And so the guy figured, the leader's like, you know, how do I get them to care? These are people, they're just overhauling engines.
Yeah, right.
And they were at the end of the line for International Harvester. They don't care about them anymore. He said, we can't have a bad month. We can't have a bad week. Hell, we can't even have a bad day.
No, and we can't have a bad customer interaction. We can't piss somebody off here. Yeah.
And so what they developed was he figured, look, when I played basketball, if you knew the score, you had to do things to help the score.
Right.
Even if you were on the bench or you were the towel person or just the coach, you were trying to influence the score.
Right.
And there are different things you could do. So he devised a system where everyone knew whether or not they had a good day or not. Each day. And it was open book management. And not only were they able to pay off the loan, but they were able to grow faster than Warren Buffett's company, mm-hmm. and become more just they grew to the point where everyone was able to buy a house. And that was their goal.
Wow.
And now they teach this system to companies all over the world. And so it was developed under fire. There was a necessity. It worked. It's worked for them in lots of businesses, as well as for a lot of people who have adopted it. So
when you go to the employees and they say, hey, boss, we need a raise, and you say, well, look at the numbers here. We can't afford one here. Rather than going, oh, yeah, he's getting a raise. He gets to go to a country club. He gets to get a new car, but not me. He doesn't care about me, therefore I'm not going to care about you. Instead, it becomes like a team sport. We're all in this together, and we can see whether we're getting ahead or getting behind. Somehow you feel invested in the result, and then and hopefully then if they do share the wealth along the way, and make that makes people even more invested in it.
And it's really seeing reality, because I've done due diligence on companies, and I remember one where I was looking at the local branch of it, and the guy goes, oh, they make this much per month here, because I take in the they had to file a return for taxes. And they're putting that much money in their pocket. And so people who don't know tend to, if they work for you, they think you're doing a lot better off than you are.
Boss is always rich, I'm always poor.
And when you show them the reality, hey, here's where it is, and you structure the, I've been looking at a lot of service businesses, and there's some great models in terms of structuring things so people, their income is tied to how efficient they are, how much work they do. If they're more productive, if they get more business, they're going to make more money. If we raise the prices, they make more money. So you get everyone rowing in the same direction.
Yeah. You're now the second person that said this. Again, I keep referencing this guy, the Corporate Undertaker, does a show here. One of the things he does to immediately establish trust and belief, they're in a miserable situation. We're going to shut down in a week, usually, when he gets finally called in. And nobody wants to believe. Everybody's heading for the door. Nobody believes who can turn it around. Everybody's blaming each other. So what do you do? He said, the first thing you got to do is open the books. Everybody's got to know what the reality is here. No more baloney. No more imagination, fears, whatever. Here's what it is, folks. This, we're not just kidding you. This is really how bad it is. And then try and establish some belief that you can turn it around by doing little things first, not big things.
Yep. and seeing the reality of it, and that's the
like
benefit.
Cleaning out, like you said, he would just immediately go and clean out old junk in the office and clean out empty stockroom stuff, somehow just make it look like it's changing. We're symbolically cleaning house, even if it's just something as silly as that, just to give people some feeling that something's different's happening here.
Well, explaining the situation and being vulnerable in terms of showing the reality and consistently doing that we're wired to be in a pack and hunt. We're wired that, guess what? Things don't always work out. But one of the great things is when we're hungry, our brains actually are able to focus more. When it's time,
right,
we got to find something to eat, we can focus more. Our brains can actually concentrate better.
Zoom in on something there.
Just applying those kind of things like, hey, we got to eat.
So can I say something else in this? I hope people don't find this offensive. This may be, I have to say this carefully, but you're dealing with people on the low rung of the economic ladders here. You know, this is hourly employees with maybe not the same ambition, dreams, goals that you as a business owner have. They may not see the big pictures. They may not be as well educated. They just may not be as creative and imaginative. That's why they're in this kind of hourly environment that they're in. They like to just be kind of told what to do and go do it, and they're good at that. Now you're asking them to take on a more entrepreneurial outlook, to look at stuff they've never looked at, to talk in a way they've probably never talked. Is that a dream? Is that difficult? Or is that doable?
Well, it's been done. And when they've done studies and how when people have different expectations of them, when they believe in them, mm-hmm, when they feel special, that, hey, somebody cares, that they're willing to teach. A lot of times no one's ever shown them this. No one's taken the time.
I'm reminded kind of things, of the great, I think they made a movie of this. I know it's been written up a couple of times. Somewhere in the country, I can't tell you where, maybe it's in, I think it's like in New York City, there is an inner city school that was just, you know, the most failing students in the planet, all broken homes, all crack-riddled neighborhoods, you know, just the kids, everybody thinks they give up on. And this school has turned it around with these kids, and many of them have gone on to live bigger and better lives than, not all of them, but many of them have gone on to live bigger and better lives, and they do it by teaching them Latin. Latin, the pointless thing that I had to study in Catholic school here. Because it's very structured, it's very strict, it's very rules-oriented language, if nobody's ever looked at it. And it's something that they just thought, we're going to teach them so out of the realm. If you can learn Latin, then you can do anything, kid. Latin, something you never even heard of before. It's hard, and Latin's hard, and it's difficult, but it's very structured. And it's very disciplined. And by doing this, they get them in this sort of disciplined way of thinking and problem solving and analyzing things. And I just marvel at that. I wish I could, I'll see if I can come up with the name of the school, but they teach inner city kids Latin, and through that they've gotten them to think bigger and see if you can do this, then you can do anything.
It's engaging parts of the brain that sometimes aren't engaged, right? But if you get their prefrontal cortex and their executive brain engaged in thinking, and that, hey, we think you can get this.
So you're going to teach your hourly landscapers, your hourly janitors to do Latin. You're going to teach them to think bigger, whatever it is, yeah.
I teach business owners, and a lot of times they don't know the difference between an income statement and a balance sheet.
Right.
Now, they're good at hiding it.
I am when I go to get my car fixed. He opens the hood and I go, yeah, okay, yeah, that looks good to me.
I'm learning stuff every day. I mean, my daughter likes science and will watch science videos. I mean, the amount of like what you can learn on science about on YouTube is like mind-boggling,
oh,
right?
Yeah, right.
And so it's a matter of what are we exposed to? We're exposed to very limited things.
Yeah.
Most people aren't exposed to how does a profit and loss statement work?
No.
How Where do you make they? Money? That's clear. So a lot of times it's kept close to the vest. Well, it's not working. So
Yeah, when my daughter worked at McDonald's, she wasn't expected to know much other than just, we're going to teach you a robotic thing, and you're going to do it over and over again. You're a human robot. And if you follow this exactly, you stay. If you don't, we'll fire you, and we move on.
Right. But if instead, we're hiring you, we want to find out where you're at, where would you like to go? We don't expect you to run the fry machine the rest of your life. How can we have, what is success? Is it a 2-year, a 3-year relationship where you progress? Maybe you learn how to manage people, how to lead people. Maybe they don't want to do that at all, but maybe they want to get good at talking to people. What is important to them if they want to go into a career in sales? And hey, some of the best advice I ever got was from a guy who said, if you want to make money, if you want to be rich, number one thing is learn to sell.
Yeah, right.
I mean, that there are a lot of people that are wealthy who are not the smartest people in the world.
No, I've known many, but they were really good at that one skill. There is, yeah.
And that's right. Connecting with people. And now we have to connect with customers and suppliers of labor.
But we live in a business environment where over the last 20, 30 years, we've connected less with people. We've become more internet-oriented. We've become more technologically. Yeah. And so many companies, in order to grow, think that they have to standardize, which means they have to turn every process, I have to analyze it, turn it into a robotic series of maneuvers that doesn't really encourage somebody to think. Just follow.
Well, if you look at things like Southwest Airlines, mm-hmm. where they give their people the ability to connect with people and be funny.
Yeah, sing silly songs in the plane and other sorts
of. But it's important to connect with people, not to just treat them like a number. And they get more applications by a factor. I don't know if it was thousands more than they hire, but it's a very high ratio, and they don't pay a lot. But people, there's emotional compensation there.
Emotional compensation, that's the key. I've told the story a million times, maybe I've shared it here. Many years ago, as a consultant, I would travel around, and I went to a convention center a couple of years in a row. And it was here in Orange County. And 1 year I stayed at the Hilton. Awful experience. Everything was wrong. Everybody was rude. The key didn't work. Nobody came when they said they were going to come. It was just a horrible experience. I sent a nasty note to the manager and never heard back. The next year, I went to the property across the street, a Marriott. And I know that Marriott's famous for their customer service. At least they were back then. And I arrived late. I wanted to go down to the pool and take a little swim. And I got there just as it's closing. It's 11 o'clock. And I look around. There's no towels. There's nobody there. And I thought, oh, here we go again. And there's a little, I'll call him a towel boy, whatever. You know, I don't want to be condescending, but some guy, the lowest.
I believe the technical term is pool boy.
Pool boy, okay. Towel boy, okay. I mean, he's at the lowest rung of the ladder there on this thing. He's just there to pick up towels and put them in a basket and wash them here. And he's obviously at the end of his shift. And the pool's closing. And he's over there, and there's no soul around. And as I see him start with this giant basket of towels, go into the building to lock it and leave me behind, he looks around at my frustrated face and he says, do you need a towel? And I thought, wow, how did they get him to care? Why did he care whether he's gone? Nobody's going to know whether I'm happy or sad. The day's done. See ya. You're late, buddy. 100 reasons he could have just kept walking, but he stopped and went and got me a towel. And I wrote that to the general manager, and they were so thrilled. I said, I'll never stay at your competitor ever again. I said, I don't know how you did it, but you got this low-level hourly employee, this kid, to care. I'm impressed.
It's and Marriott's, they built a mega brand off of that.
Yeah, right? And look, how many times have I told the story through the years? I've become their biggest advocate here off of that one silly experience. Imagine if one of your employees touches people in the same way, and they tell stories forever about Alex's guy or girl that did something extraordinary that wasn't expected at that level.
And when you share those stories internally, we're wired to hear stories.
Yes.
I mean, that's how we pass along knowledge. So when you share those stories, one of the things I'm looking at the first company is it's a distributed thing. It's not under one roof. So people are going to be out in the field. But getting together and telling story.
Yeah.
I've done a lot of work in Hawaii, and they always talk about talking story.
Yes, that's right. But that's what these shows are about, talking stories.
We are wired to sit around, eat.
The campfire, swap stories.
Laugh and tell stories.
Yeah, exactly. At the bar, at the around the campfire somewhere here. That's what we kind of do every week on this show here. I love the whole concept, and I'd love to hear more when you finally pull the trigger and come back. I'd love to share this journey with the audience, because there's a lesson. Even though you're not going to be a consultant anymore, even though you're cutting the ties, I would like to hope that you can still share with us the knowledge that you gain in this process, and the surprises, the things. We're all waiting for the thing you didn't see coming, the thing you didn't know you didn't know. Gee, I had it all figured out. I read every book, but who knew this was going to happen? I never thought of this. Those are the ones that are the real enlighteners. I'm sure they're scary to
rubber meets in the road thing. Absolutely. It's right now I'm using all my techniques when I wake up in the middle of the night worried about something about the deal. And so how to deal with that. And
because you know how to look at you know how to look at the numbers and yes, you're trying to figure out the projections and see the potential, and you've investigated the similar businesses, I'm sure, and what's the potential and what are they doing right, what are they doing wrong. You've got all these fresh ideas in your head. You're going to bring this high-level experience to what most people would think is kind of a small little service operation. The typical guy that owns a janitor's group of janitors or something isn't that much of a sophisticated business person. They knew how to do the job. They hired a couple other people to help them. Pretty soon they got a little company here painting or doing something manual like that. And now you're going to come in with a different sort of outlook, so sophisticated, educated, high-level experience. Is that easily translated into a small service environment?
That's what we're going to find out.
That's what we're going to find out here.
My pain can be other people's gain.
Yeah, right.
So, and that's originally why I started the show, is to hear from people trying concepts to improve their business. And it's been a challenge, but I got a number of concepts I want to try and put my money and my time where my mouth is.
Yeah.
And find out it's in really the thing that I know I'm going to have to deal with is overcoming the obstacles.
Yes.
And that there will be there. Ideally, I can at least identify it and have a plan.
Right.
I'll
give you one silly example from my life. I always was involved in the bar and restaurant business, mostly as a consultant. I was a restaurant writer for a while for a local Riverside paper. I did a lot of PR work for restaurants and very high-level ones and whatnot. I thought I had kind of I'm a sophisticated diner myself. I thought I kind of knew what was cool and what was hot. And boy, wouldn't it be fun to run one of these things myself one day? So a couple of buddies and I decided we were going to open up an Irish pub in Mission Viejo. And we pulled together some money and we all went in like, this is going to be a giant Cheers bar. And it was not that much fun. It was a lot harder work than we thought it was. It was 24/7. But we were there for 10 years. We made money at it, and until we finally decided enough and rents went up and we got out of the whole thing. Now, the point of the story is this. I'm a marketing guy, PR and marketing guy. So that was my role. Well, Paul's going to handle all the marketing thing. Yeah, I'm going to come up with better marketing for a neighborhood bar than anybody's ever come up with. Just wait till you see the ads. Wait till you see the PR. Wait till you see the promotions I'm going to put together. Forget about it. What worked was giving away T-shirts in the bar and having, two-for-one nights. And the silliest, stupidest, low-level promotions, all the clever, high-level stuff I tried, it didn't work. It just was real, real basic kind of marketing 101. Simple stuff.
It's funny, you mentioned the silly things. There's a local company here I was looking at. I'd seen their trucks out, and they had a flamingo on them. And I looked into it, And it was an accident. They originally, early in the business, they were on a busy road and they wanted just to kind of get some attention. So they ordered flamingos, faux flamingos.
Yeah. Pink flamingos, and, fake flamingos,
yeah,
right.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, is 100 enough or should we get two orders? Well, they got two orders, but that they didn't realize they were pairs. And so they had way more flamingos than they ever thought.
Right.
And this was, you know, wasn't from buying it from Amazon where you can send back what you didn't want. And so they put them out there and they were shocked that people wanted to come in and buy them.
Yeah.
And they became known for the flamingos and they sold them out. They didn't think it was going to be anything. They kind of just did it as, hey, I just need something. Maybe get a little tent, you know,
right.
People drive by. When they drive by, they're like, hey, what's that? And so, you know, that's one of the things that the internet companies have taught is testing things.
Right.
In terms of, hey, we like to take assessments of ourselves and we like articles that have a number in them, like
the five ways. Yeah. The five ways to do this. The three tips to do this is listicles. Yeah. We're constantly looking for a quick series of suggestions.
Because they tested and they worked. Right. And so it's a matter of testing what works and doesn't work. One of the things that Silicon Valley does is they cut their losses. If something's not testing and working, they'll shut. I've had a number of services where I loved it, and they stopped doing it.
Yeah, fail fast, they call it. Find out, cut through it real quickly here. If it's going to fail, then fail fast and move on.
Yep.
Figure it out, move on. Well, I hope all of these things will apply to the practical real world. Too often we think that the consultants are people that if you know those who can't do teach, and that we're all just a group of know-it-alls, but when it comes down to it, we don't have real, we had real world experience once upon a time, but that was like academics, it was a long time ago. And can we really put this into practice? I think it's a fascinating experiment. I'd love to chronicle it with you as you go along here through this show and any other way we can. Because I think there's a lot to learn. You're out there doing it. You're out there in the front lines, baby, doing it for all of us here.
That's the plan. And I figure it makes some good listening. I would listen to that kind of show. Like, okay, what's going on?
Yeah, what's going on this week? There was a big famous podcast. I forgot the name of it now. And it was sort of about tracking an entrepreneur through. It was a startup, you know,
right.
All the stuff that they had to go through from napkin to creation. And that found a real fascinating following. This is a little more mature, a different version of that. Can you step in and acquire a small business in an old school kind of thing? This isn't sexy. This isn't fun. We're cleaning septic tanks. We're cleaning buildings. We're doing something here. Can you find a business like that and apply these principles that you've applied so well to huge companies? Will it work as well for you? Can you do it yourself? And can you do it on this scale with the most basic of businesses here?
That's it.
All right. Tune in each and every week. Anybody, if they want to talk with you and share this journey, if somebody has a burning question that they, I know you're not a consultant anymore, but can they still ask Verobi of something here?
Yeah. Hey, Verobi, if button still works at Confident ROI. And if you want me to try something, I'm still going to be doing interviews with people because I'd love to learn.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Now I love to apply. You know, I want to apply it.
Yeah,
so
right.
What's out there, and we're dealing with an age of how do we connect with our team,
mm-hmm.
and so those are kind of things people are seeing working, and they can share what's working for them.
What a great way you can actually go out and sort of get a free consultancy from other consultants. You can say, here, I'm a business owner, and we're involved. We're having trouble onboarding people. We're having trouble retaining people. We're having trouble with, I don't know, labor laws or whatever, pick something more sophisticated or complicated.
Tariffs.
Ooh, yeah, right. Whatever it is. And you can bring people in and say, okay, so give people like me some advice. And in the process, we all learn from it.
Exactly.
See if they can apply some of these tips in the real world here. All right. Well, it's going to be a show that will give you, I'm much more confident now than ever before, I'm going to get real return on this investment, because you're all in. You're invested in this as well as the rest of us. It's not just talk, you're trying to walk it here too.
Betting my life on it.
All right. You bet your life. All right. All right, so give us that website again, and then we'll sign off until next week here.
ConfidentROI.com.
All right. Come back and confidently listen as he takes this giant leap of faith. You've been listening to Confident ROI right here on Orange County's only community radio station, OCTalkRadio.net.